Hello, everybody. This is Russell Canning from NH Exit again, and this is our third podcast, and I'm talking with Dave Ridley again.
That would be me. The Don't Get Mad Get Video guy.
So I'm talking from a hotel room in Lafayette, Louisiana tonight. Is Dave in an undisclosed location in New Hampshire or where?
Oh, no, I'm visiting Colorado for Christmas.
Okay. So we're both behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
like I noticed in the news this week, Morocco is normalizing relations with Israel. So they're going to have embassies in each other's countries soon.
Good.
That also reminds me of how some people can't picture how we can be, how we can split and how we can be recognized. Well, think of all the countries that don't recognize Israel as a country. But then this year, two or three of them have. That'll happen with us, right? Maybe California won't recognize New Hampshire for a while, but then they'll normalize relationships with us.
Yeah, and the thing we have going for us, the states of the United States really all have this going for them. There really isn't a great deal of animosity or territorial dispute between states, right? This is not like Romania versus Bulgaria or something here. This is a situation where we're starting from a position of relative internal peace, despite all the bombs that the feds have flung outside their borders. The internal situation is there's not a long history of blood feuds between states.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't sure exactly what we should cover with on this one, but something came up that made me think, as we go along, we're kind of going to be going down deep, long paths of secession and plans and schemes and history and stuff like that. But also some people that will be listening to us are newbies to this. And I notice as we ramp up activism, we're getting newbie questions. So how about I ask you a couple questions that I got today? Are you ready?
Good. I'm glad you're getting questions. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So a lady that lives in New Hampshire said, well, I got some of my questions answered from a couple articles that somebody posted, but she had a couple more questions, one of which is, what happens to her Social Security?
Oh, I'll have to play the role of a newbie on that question. I don't know. The federal government probably wouldn't pay out Social Security to people who are in New Hampshire if New Hampshire is independent, unless there were some kind of pre-existing agreement.
This is something that I found in the frequently asked questions on nhindependence.org. They cover this.
Interesting.
They mention, think of it this way. If you retire to, say, Mexico, on the west coast of Mexico, you live in another country, you used to be, you're still a citizen of the United States, and you live in another country, you still receive those payments. Maybe that won't be true in the future, or maybe there's all kinds of complications that I don't know about, but I've actually read that.
That kind of makes sense. My suspicion is that in a scenario where the federal government is still paying Social Security and the money is still worth something, in that scenario, I don't think we can get New Hampshire independence. Something catastrophic would have to happen for independence to start looking good to people, that it would probably involve wiping out their Social Security payments. And that would precede the drive for independence. You're not getting it anyway. If you're getting it, then probably independence isn't practical. We probably can't bring it about.
Or here's another whole angle. if we are leaving and they're not too happy about it, there might be repercussions for people that live here. That's
Yeah,
possible
that's one
too.
of the reasons I like to say that Estonia is the model. That's what you want to do. Do what Estonia did. And with the Estonian situation, they've negotiated with Moscow, and Moscow came to an agreement with Estonia, and they just peacefully went parted ways. This would be the ideal. It was where a situation where the Moscow government was getting nicer and nicer, right? It was getting more and more tolerant. In the 1987 era. And that would be awesome if that's the way we got independence in the United States. But I don't think that's how that kind of thing would play out. I think if the federal government were getting more and more tolerant, well, we would just shrink. People would just stop listening to the podcast. They'd stop coming to nhexit.org and come. And they'd go about their lives, and some of us, and I wouldn't care about it as much, if the federal government were getting better. But I don't think that's the path ahead of us right now. I think it's going to get less benign, over some period of time.
Yeah, I've seen some people that are being attracted to our movement, but it's because of the lockdowns and things like that. Also, back to Estonia, am I remembering it right? That part of the negotiations when Estonia was leaving was because of like the 20, 30% Russians that lived in the state.
Yeah, that complicated things somewhat, but it actually played to the Estonians' advantage because when the ethnic Russians sort of rose up against independence, the Estonians handled it so well that they really the Russians didn't have much to complain about afterwards. Have you seen this video? Where there were these some Russian they were Russian demonstrators or something like that, and the way they
And
were handled, the way they were
because
handled. In 1989, it was so peaceful, and I think it was kind of like a people power thing where people just kind of bands around some group or something. I don't know what it was, but everyone just sort of went home, at the end of it.
it seems like because the Russians, when this first happened, the Russians were really worried that they were going to get abused, right?
Well, they got abused all right by the Russian government. The Estonian government treats them pretty well.
Yeah, and that makes sense that, they were so afraid of this. And then the Estonians, they weren't looking for trouble. They just wanted it a little bit more like it used to be before the USSR.
Yeah.
I think that could happen now because that's the thing is you get questions from people that are so worried of any change from the status quo. And, why would New Hampshire when it splits, turn terrible in any way. That doesn't make any sense. The other question she had was worried about could New Hampshire survive on its own?
Well, Slovenia does for the most part. They've moved closer and closer to the EU. But Estonia is the same story. Slovenia is about the same population as New Hampshire. I think Estonia is, I don't know, maybe what, 4 or 5 million. So it's a little bit bigger. And of course there are a lot of micro nations out there. There's countries that are just dots in the ocean.
Yeah, that's the thing is, this isn't something that I worry about just from, just from the pure, size and stuff like that. Just from the population and things like that. There's so many places that are so much smaller than New Hampshire. Why would this be such a horrible thing? So scary.
Well, actually, a lot of times the least scary thing to do is still pretty scary. And again,
Well,
I don't.
okay, so I'm looking at a list of countries by population. Yes, and Estonia and Latvia and Slovenia are all in the same neighborhood as New Hampshire. Estonia is 1.3 million people.
Okay.
That's almost the same. Latvia is 1.9 million and Slovenia is 2 million. That's very
Okay.
similar.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting when you start comparing this to then also when you put New Hampshire compared to other places for GDP, of course we're quite a ways up there. And then if you do New Hampshire by GDP per capita, wow, we're in the top like 5 or 10, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because New Hampshire's above average for the United States, and the United States is in like the neighborhood of the 5th to the 10th biggest per capita, right?
Yeah, and that's the other thing that kind of makes New Hampshire similar to Estonia and Slovenia and Catalonia, actually, now that we think about it, is that it's in a northern, I think Catalonia is in the northern, but sure. Like both Estonia and Slovenia, for sure, were in the northernmost parts of their country, and they were more prosperous with, you know, cooler climates, more temperate people, less nationalism, you know, less violence. That kind of goes along with colder temperatures.
And I know when I think about New Hampshire compared to some places, I mean, isn't New Hampshire better than a lot of places in the Middle East and in Africa? I mean, it's like, you know, New Hampshire splitting. I'd rather live in New Hampshire than Sudan, right?
Yeah. Well, no, obviously, there's not really much comparison. And I guess that's one reason why I'm biasing toward, you know, Western experiences. Eastern Europe, just because the more unlike us a place is, you know, the less their secession experience speaks to us, right? Mm-hmm. So this, yeah, you know,
exactly.
Slovenes are a lot like New Hampshireites in a lot of ways, you know, in comparison to the environment around them. You know, what was it? A Serbian friend of mine used to say, we thought they were choir boys until we tried to send tanks into Ljubljana, and we found out they weren't choir boys. But they normally are, you know, perceived as having just sort of this low temperature, you know, low intensity culture, right? Mm-hmm. And to some extent, it's the same way in Estonia. And so that, you know, those are the models. Well, not so much Slovenia, but I think against Estonia is really the Estonian experience is sort of the model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think we'll have to keep revisiting this particular topic, you know, just like the topic of, you know, are we allowed to secede, or, you know, the Civil War, right? I mean, people's minds go to the same topics, you know, and we'll keep addressing that over and over. So maybe we can hit it from different angles each time, because that's definitely, that's what people ask.
And so, it's funny how, you know, we're all these minutes into it, and we haven't even started talking about Quebec or Scotland, and this mm-hmm. this overall question of, well, is that how secession works in the West now, right? Maybe it doesn't work like, you know, Appomattox or Fort Sumter. Maybe it works. Maybe it just looks like Brexit. Maybe it just looks like, you know, Scotland versus London. Maybe it just looks like Quebec trying to secede from Canada. Maybe that's how that plays out in the West now.
Well, yeah, wouldn't you think that Scotland leaving the UK would be very similar for us?
Somewhat similar, I guess I would say.
Because it's happening at the same time.
Yeah, there are comparisons, but the Scottish situation is somewhat different in the fact that they're attempting to secede partly because they're more socialist than the London UK people, and it would be the opposite for us. But again, yeah, Quebec is the same thing. They tend to be more socialistic than the other Canadian provinces, and so they're not driven by any kind of desire for personal freedom so much as for culture, like a cultural independence and preserving the French language in Quebec.
And with the Scottish, a lot of them want to rejoin the EU.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, I've been trying to follow with the NH, you know, on the NH Exit account on Twitter, I'm following all these other secession movements as I come across them. So it is interesting to see what each group thinks is important, or what they're pushing for, or what they're trying to separate from. They're all different.
Right.
Like the Western Canadian province ones like Alberta and stuff. You know, of course, they're on the opposite end of the scale from Quebec, right? They're wanting less socialism, more selling of oil.
And the weird thing with Canada, last I checked, I mean, I haven't followed the situation very closely over the last few years, but historically, I guess over the last, you know, 50 years or so, my understanding is that Canada, which has no constitution to speak of, like the American Constitution, or at least I should correct myself. It's not that they don't have a, I don't know if they have a constitution or not. They have, I think, a central government that's been ceding more and more power to the provinces over time, despite the fact that the legal framework, you wouldn't really think that that's how it would play out. And the United States has this legal framework of federalism, supposedly, that's supposed to, I mean, the power is supposed to be automatically delegated to these states, and yet the federal government is pulling more power from the states toward itself over time. So mm-hmm. The Canadian situation has been getting more decentralized over time, and the American situation seems to have been getting more centralized.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that's happened during my lifetime off the top of my head where they've been giving power from Washington, D.C. out to the states. Has that happened at all?
I can't think of anything. It's just one of those questions of, you know, the Constitution might say that it's not supposed to be a certain way, but the federal government has the nukes and the heavy weaponry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you know, I haven't thought about this, but yeah, we'll have to figure out a way for people that listen to the podcast, they could write questions to the podcast for us to answer on here. So we'll figure out a way to do that.
Good idea. That was a really good idea, taking the questions from people.
They're coming up.
Yeah, not that I'm some infallible expert that can answer them all. The other thing too is if they're okay with it, it'd be nice to name, you know, the people that the questions come from to make sure that they understand how important they are.
Yeah, that's what we could do. We could if they send it to the podcast and want their name, then we'll be because this person that was asking these questions, you know, wasn't expecting an answer from a podcast. So, yeah. we could definitely cover that because that's the questions come up a lot with this. And then most of them, we're not going to have answers, or we'll say, yep, that's tough. Or, you know, it's not easy.
Well, we're not competing with perfect here, right? I mean, that's the default answer, right?
Who we are competing with is California, Texas, and Scotland and Quebec. Right. I think I also will develop a relationship with one of the Alberta secession guys.
Yeah.
They're kind of my kind of people. You know, I was born on an Indian reservation in the top of Montana. So I'm practically from Alberta. So, you know.
No way.
Yeah, some of my relatives, some of my relatives from Montana and Canada have been doing meetups, you know, like Zoom calls. And it all started because the Canadians can't do hardly anything. My aunt died and they can't have a funeral.
Oh boy.
You know, and so in listening to my relatives up there, it's worse. So
yeah, it's crazy. Well, that's one thing. The decentralization of the United States has not been maintained, but during this particular crisis, that's one thing that has gone right in the United States is that the federal government actually did not try to step in and tell everyone in every state government with any kind of, you know, how to micromanage their situation. There was not really an attempt at imposing a one size fits all solution on the whole country. and as bad or good as things are, have gone, you know, that it was interesting to see that some of the decentralization did still function.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, is we'd be having a lot more people interested in secession right now if the federal government was doing the lockdowns.
Well, just wait 5 months.
Yeah, it might be. You know, and well, I travel around all the time, so every state is so different.
Yeah, I was 5 months is probably not the right figure. It may be more like 1 month.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been getting different stuff, but yeah, I search for secession stuff every once in a while, and I'm definitely running into more of it. I'm running into a lot of it because of the blue state, red state thing. They're getting very angry with each other.
Time for a divorce.
I know, that's where, you know, it seems like there's a lot of people ready for it.
It's so funny how it seems like people who recognize that right that a woman has to get away from her abusive husband will not recognize the right of a million people to get away from, you know, their abusive Washington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like right now, you know, thinking about how any federal taxes you put in are paying for the vaccine that you might not be interested in.
Yeah, that you might be forced to take or forced to stop traveling because you haven't taken it yet. Or, I mean,
yeah,
it's like we were saying at the podcast before last, you know, some of the barriers to, so one of the key barriers to secession is the travel issue. You know, people just assume, well, since states automatically have to be fascistic and terrible, that would mean that I would have to show a passport to go from Massachusetts to New Hampshire, because that's the only possible way that states can exist, is if they're forcing each other to show passports. But now they're making it so that maybe you will have to show a passport anyway to get from New Hampshire to Massachusetts under the current administration or the next administration. I mean, there were roadblocks between some states in the April 2020 era, I believe.
Yes. You know, when it first started, I wasn't knowing what to believe. And since I travel around all the time moving trucks, this was a real issue. And one place I know had a checkpoint was I-95 heading south into Florida.
That's right. That's
between Georgia and Florida. And what they did is they took over the truck checkpoint that we have to go through. They turned that into some sort of medical checkpoint or something, or, you know, make you have to quarantine or something like that. And when I would look at Google Maps, there was snarled traffic. And those of us truck drivers that go on US 17, I believe it is, to avoid the checkpoint, they closed that road.
Closed the whole road?
Yeah, closed the old US highway to make sure you were on the freeway.
Yeah, that should help. I mean, that's a great way to make sure that emergency vehicles can get to their hospitals faster.
Yeah, I don't. You know, so that, I know that happened. And wasn't there stuff like Rhode Island didn't want people coming from New York?
I think so.
But I don't know how they were enforcing that. Or,
yeah, well, give it time.
Yeah, that's the thing, is just like when I got off the plane at the beginning of this, I flew from California back to Dallas, and they greeted you with a form telling you that you had to quarantine. But I already had heard that us truck drivers were exempt from it. So there goes your quarantine. They just let truck drivers come and go. So
yeah, I think Massachusetts resident, or Massachusetts is requiring people to fill out a form in order to leave the state and come back.
See, and how are they enforcing that?
I believe it was a $500 fine, but I don't know other than that.
Yeah, because they're not stopping you from crossing.
Right. Now, travelers, are exempt. Because I just traveled into Massachusetts, you know, last month from New Hampshire. And they, you know, if you're just on the way through Massachusetts, like, you know, on your way to an airport or something like that, and they don't make you fill out the form. But then that is a level above just handing you something, right? Like making you provide them with information that could be incriminating, or used against you, in order to just leave the state and come back.
Yeah, this is crossing things that haven't. I mean, this is craziness we haven't had before.
Yeah,
I don't know when. I don't know when the last time this kind of thing happened.
Well, yeah, interesting. In 1918, it was sort of backwards. It was more like the government was trying to. It was more like they were trying to downplay the flu because they had a different obsession then, and that was Germany. Now they have this one obsession, which is COVID, which means like. If you're obsessed with Germany and you're ignoring the world's most deadly outbreak of the flu, it seems, you know, now what's happening is they're obsessed with COVID and they're probably ignoring something else that's much worse.
Yeah, could be.
Or maybe just a combination of things, you know, where all the different deaths from that result from COVID restrictions outweigh the number of deaths that would have happened from just COVID if there had been no restrictions.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So, you know, people talking COVID and lockdowns all the time. I travel to different places. I see different people reacting to it differently. Every state's different. When I was last in New Hampshire, it was not too bad. Not as good as the very best places, but not one of the worst.
Yeah, I've heard that it's sort of middle of the road, but I don't know exactly how it stands currently.
My craziest has been Indian reservations.
Okay.
Out west. I actually had one turn me away. They closed a highway.
Interesting.
In northwest New Mexico. You could drive on some of the roads up there because there's different. There's Navajo Nation, and this was like Zuni Nation, and it's not very big. So you could drive to the Navajo Nation, but I drove down a road where they turned us around.
All right.
If you didn't live in that town, isn't that crazy? So there is new stuff happening.
Yeah, I had an experience in May in just east of Manchester in New Hampshire where they had blocked a road for, I think, 2 months. And they had like a guy standing at the road saying, "You're not allowed to come here." "Well, why not?" "Well, because some people were driving over to this trailhead and exercising."
Wow.
Too many people were driving to the trailhead and wanting to exercise. Why? Maybe because we locked them down?
Yeah, that's the thing. I thought that was the thing, is that more people were biking and hiking because that was something you were allowed to do, right?
Right, except not there.
Wow.
They were like, "Well, go around to the other side of Pawtuckaway State Park." I mean, it would be... I think it would be about a 7-mile drive to get into the park if you can't enter it from that side. You want to go to the other side? You just need back roads for 7 miles just to get into the park. And pay money, by the way. You had to pay a fee to go in that other way. So that was just me. That was just one thing, you know. And I've experienced, you know, the thing I haven't experienced is what's going on in the other states, you know. So I just don't know how to compare it to New Hampshire other than my brief experience driving through Massachusetts recently and then, you know, being here in Colorado for a few days, those experiences I have, but it's not the breadth of experience that you have from what you've seen while you're out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I first was running around, it started getting a little bit worse and a little bit worse. I tried to stay out of the Northeast. And California was kind of crazy at the beginning, but Arizona and Texas and Florida were not too bad.
Yeah.
And then partway through the summer, they decided to punish Arizona, Texas, and Florida and told us that we were all going to die and we needed to lock down. So right now, Texas is worse than quite a few other states right now.
Okay.
I would say Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana are all better. Tennessee, Arkansas are pretty good. Missouri, and then Florida is not too bad. And and then the bigger the city, the worse it is. Out in the country,
right.
I go to places where there's lots of farmers and stuff, and you know they don't have to wear crazy stuff at their work because they're off doing their own thing. So, and then I'm hanging out at truck stops, and but the one of my goofy things is I deliver trucks often to dealerships. And what's funny is the shop will act like you're contaminated and you can't walk in there. But yeah. Then if you go over to the sales, but you go over to the sales part, the salesmen come up and shake your hand and want to sell you a truck.
All right. Good.
Because they're wanting to sell you a truck. Now you're a person. But yeah. When you go over to the shop, so some of the time I'm delivering to the salesman, sometimes I'm delivering to the shop, so you get different experiences.
Yeah,
it's all happening in the big place. And
well, Tony, we should shake hands.
Yeah, and then I think in the bigger the company that I deal with, the more rules there are. Yeah. Like if I go to FedEx, I don't go into their place anymore. I don't go into their building. I like deliver a truck in a parking lot and somebody picks it up.
Yeah.
And then that's fine with me, but it's kind of funny.
Well, it's hard to, I mean, there's that sort of Mark Edge case that actually handshaking doesn't really serve very many useful purposes anyway. And it's okay to do away with it. And I really don't mind, you know, if that happens, I guess, but what I do mind is that they force everybody to do it their way, and then you know, they take your money and use it to fund the enforcement process.
Yeah, especially if it keeps happening, you know, if it continues on and on.
Yeah, well, you never know. I mean, they like to talk about how we're going to get to the other side of it, but they're going to see all these different powers they've gained, and they're going to want to keep some of those powers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it seems like in this situation, in the subject of NHExit, since right now each state is a little bit different, part of our thing is going to have to be working on, okay, how can we make New Hampshire less locked down, more sane?
Yeah, and of course that would have the effect of making it look more different, you know, from the rest of the country. It would be better if instead of being in the middle of the road, as it was at least a few months ago, I don't know how we stand right now, but if we had been the least locked down state in the union, that would have provided a contrast that would have, you know, I mean, the more different we can look from the rest of the states, the more normal secession feels and looks.
Mm-hmm. Would you say right now that people view like South Dakota and maybe Florida as the best in regards to COVID?
Yeah, my understanding is South Dakota was the best last I heard. But then, yeah, I've also heard some good things about the Florida situation. However, Florida, you know, they have a warm climate, which is favorable to fighting COVID. And the fact that it's been done at all in South Dakota, a really cold place, is significant.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just in South Dakota 4 days ago. I used to not go there hardly ever, but now I do because I move bucket trucks for electric companies. They're made in South Dakota. So okay. I've been going there a lot. And it is better, but right now, Wyoming and Montana and North Dakota are pretty much the same as South Dakota.
Okay.
From what I see. But
I like what somebody said about I toured Wyoming in 02 when I was trying to decide who to which state to vote for, in like in terms of which state to move to, for which would be the best state for libertarians to move to, basically. One of the things that I kind of stuck in my mind was something somebody said, that Wyoming is not free because people have set up a nice system and they've stuck up for their freedoms. It's just free because there's no one here.
Yeah, I would say so.
And that's the opposite type of freedom that we have in New Hampshire, which is really, I mean, it's a high population state compared to Wyoming, and a higher, much higher density. And yet its freedom level has not really gone down over the last 20 or 30 years, despite the increasing population, despite being next to all of these authoritarian cesspools. It still does seem to maintain about the same level of freedom. And that's, I think, systemic partly. And then it's just also because immigrants to New Hampshire work to New Hampshire's advantage. I mean, if someone flees Massachusetts to New Hampshire, the odds are they're not actually that much of an authoritarian. They in many cases are more freedom oriented than the people who already lived in New Hampshire. So the immigration, and my theory is that it works to our advantage. And there's some evidence for that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, think about where you're at right now. When you get people that move from California to that area, they're not going there and making it more free.
Well, in Colorado, I don't know. Like I said, the level of freedom in Colorado does not seem to have been going down. And I grew up here and, of course, spent most of my time in New Hampshire since 03. But I'm back in Colorado, once every 18 months usually. And I don't sense the level of freedom going down overall. Except this year, where it's going down everywhere.
Yeah. And then the other one I notice is when I'm in Austin, Texas, I talk to people there and they say, if one more person moves from California, I'm leaving. But obviously they're not, because it's still growing.
Yeah.
But I think that is definitely something that happens with New Hampshire, because people are choosing it for a reason. And some of them are choosing it for more freedom than, say, New York or Massachusetts, right?
Yeah. There was a union leader poll in 2004, I think, that indicated most Massachusetts immigrants to New Hampshire were Republicans. And also another poll that indicated there's a map of New Hampshire, sort of a crude ideological map of New Hampshire that Jason Sorens made in 2004 also, or maybe 2003, right? He was the guy who founded the Free State Project, and it tracks the voting records of all the state reps in New Hampshire, based on where they live, and it color codes the map. So the blackest areas had the most freedom, and the whitest areas on the map had the least freedom. And so you see some stuff makes just what you would expect. There's, Concord, the area where all the bureaucracies are, was just bright white on the map. And so was Keene. But these areas along the border, that's where you saw a lot of the dark black, which I guess is the only color of black. But anyway, like Hillsboro, Nashua, Salem, that's where you saw these really heavy libertarian voting records on the part of state reps. So the fact that it was so close to the border, and then it also, if you go to northern New Hampshire, it was yellow. It was not, it didn't look pro-freedom at all. So That was another indication to me that the Massachusetts movers were more pro-freedom.
Yeah. See, and also, I think that same thing would happen if we were ever to secede.
You would think it would increase. It should increase, yeah, because if people think, we would attract certain kinds of people. if I move to New Hampshire and I don't have to pay federal income tax anymore, how bad would that be?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I mean, even if we had authoritarians in New Hampshire and they wanted to do terrible things and we had a lot more of them than we do, that would still be better than right now. We have authoritarians that want to do terrible things and they can affect New Hampshire and they're not even in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
It'd be so much better if all we had to deal with was Zandra Rice Hawkins, you know, or the occasional, you know, state rep that wants to put in a helmet law or whatnot. That's what we have to deal with locally, right? We don't have a torture state that we have to deal with locally, right? That's in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think about, can you imagine even if you sent the very best representatives from New Hampshire to the Senate and the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., even if all of them were wonderful, they wouldn't affect the government there.
Not much.
I mean, that would just, you know, you could, even if you sent a complete block of people off to Washington, D.C. that were wonderful, that wouldn't change what's happening to you back in New Hampshire.
No, what really happens is it seems more like we get representatives that we supposedly send to Washington, and it feels more like they're being imposed on us by Washington.
Mm-hmm. Especially senators, that they seem like they're the people they're there to tell us peons in these states what to do, us deplorables.
Yeah, I went to an event at UNH in Durham, New Hampshire in 2016, I guess, where a senator was going to appear. She had actually a phalanx of cops walking in front of her on her way into the speech she was going to give about how great U.S. bombings of things are.
And this is on a college campus.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, crazy.
I could get within 10 feet of her, and she probably never heard any of my questions, and you can see the video.
Yeah, that sure sounds like a representative of the empire to your state.
Right. That's how it feels.
Yeah.
And then when a Republican gets elected, it feels the same.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but you know, despite that, going back to the Massachusetts and freedom and New Hampshire freedom thing, you know, the fact that most of the Massachusetts immigrants were Republican, at least it undercuts this claim that they're a bunch of Democrat nanny staters from Massachusetts moving to New Hampshire. They might be authoritarian Republicans for all I know, but at least it's clear poll-driven evidence that they don't fit the stereotype that has been spewed against the Massachusetts residents.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like when I am driving around, when I'm meeting people on the streets, it's not the way they're portraying in the on TV right now, because of COVID and scaring people and stuff. You know, when I meet people out there, they're acting pretty normal. They're being pretty friendly, even though they're being propagandized at home all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, the normal people out there, I still have quite a bit of faith in, although sometimes it's scary when I see an entire room full of people that are all masked up and looking very sad. That happens sometimes.
Well, normal people get processed through the federal system, right? Into a federal government. And by the time the federal government is done processing whatever it is the people want and then reprocessing it into what the federal government wants, it's completely perverted. So what people, I mean, you say, you know, that you have an elected leader, but, you know, the system creates someone that really isn't representative of the people in the United States.
And especially as time goes by, you know.
And that's, again, that's the other benefit of New Hampshire independence, is because the system in New Hampshire tends to actually produce people that, you know, the people who rule New Hampshire kind of seem like New Hampshireites. Right? They seem like real people.
Yeah, they're people of your group. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, activists have been camped out practically outside the governor's house, which is not, it's not a Kennedy compound, right? It's just the governor's house. They go there every week and they protest outside his house. And there's, you know, it's even he, despite being a little bit of a blue blood, is somewhat accessible. I've interviewed him a time or two. And it's just, there's just no comparison between that and trying to talk to Donald Trump, right? Hello?
I lost you.
Oh, okay. It says you have started recording. Hello? I can hear you.
Yeah, you can hear me now. Sorry, I lost you for a little bit there.
Okay. Yeah, with you. But I think one thing that, like, if I were a secession skeptic and I were listening to us right now, one thing. Oh, should we finish?
Yes, I think we're going to have to.
Okay.
All right. Well, good talking to you again, Dave.
Yeah. Next time, let's talk about some details, or at least put out a request for some details.
Yes, I will. We'll make a little list of some of the specifics for the next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll catch up with you again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Russell. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye.